Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, your conference co-host. Today, I'm speaking with Derek Riedel, a transformational leader, best-selling author, and spiritual teacher to a global audience of hundreds of thousands of people. Derek has spent the last 20 years dedicated to guiding individuals through the profound shifts happening in our rapidly changing world, helping them evolve as humans in order to take their life and work to new levels and make a bigger impact on the planet. He's overcome some of the greatest personal challenges, starting with a near-death experience that opened him up to the realms beyond the mind, then divorce, the loss of a fortune, and the heartbreaking death of his son, which further deepened his understanding of the principles of healing, personal growth, and the unbounded potential of the human spirit to overcome anything and rise to higher levels as a result. Derek Riedel, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's my honor and pleasure.
I want to start with a broad question, but one that I love and is always the most interesting and revealing to me because we have lots of, conferences on different subject matters. And whether it's trauma or anxiety or sleep, I will always ask the beginning question because I always get a different answer, not because there's no right answer, but because everybody comes with a different lens of perspective. And I love that. So from your standpoint, how would you define anxiety?
Well, anxiety for me, in the most simple definition, is when your expectation of reality or outcome doesn't match the actual facts on the ground. It's basically a battle with entropy to the extent that there is chaos and disorder unfolding more than you expected, then your model of life, it's going to produce a signal called anxiety. And that's actually a good thing. From an evolutionary standpoint, it served. I'm a little anxious. My model's not matching the facts and the outcomes. Things are getting worse than I expected. Maybe I should check in with my model and reassess the facts. And maybe I should question what I believe and what I think and what I expect and is and what I'm judging and is that matching? And that's an opportunity, but unfortunately, we've evolved to where we're running those circuits even when we're just ordering a Starbucks and they're out of cream or something and we're full of anxiety. So it's gone a little too far, but that's my basic definition of anxiety.
I love it. Yeah. And yeah, our plant-based milk choices are giving us the same reaction with fewer consequences than,
Exactly.
nowadays we can ignore and suppress and avoid those reactions with low risk for the most part. Whereas, before it was if I don't listen to that intuition, I'm going to get eaten by something bigger than me.
Exactly. It's not that they're out of oat milk that's going to kill me. It's that there's a saber-toothed cat behind that bush. And yeah, and
Yeah.
definitely it's gotten out of whack and we haven't learned to how to manage it, how to understand it, how to process the information and actually make new decisions and choices about ourselves and our life. So
Yeah. Well, and in learning about your work and reading your work, there's a lot of principles of abundance and emergence and things like that. And before we even get to that part, I wanted to kind of ground everybody because I know for somebody at the beginning of their anxiety journey, like I was at one point, whether it's because acute circumstances kind of thrust them into having it, or it's been steadily building over time to like a tipping point because of the way you were raised or whatever, sometimes words like emergence and abundance can seem like so far away, so out of touch and unreachable and unattainable and like, those principles don't apply to me. Those are for other people who have a less difficult life. They must have something that I don't have and couldn't attain. So, what would you want those people to know about what's possible and how to get from, ground zero of trying to deal with anxiety to where you can feel and touch principles like abundance?
Well, first of all, I would say it's very difficult to think about how to win friends and influence others and make six figures when suddenly all the oxygen has been sucked out of the room and you're gasping for air. And so usually the first step is get some air, right? And when you're in anxiety mode, when you're in a fear mode, in a fear cycle, like falling into a sand pit, my experience is trying to quickly cover it up by, go do something that's going to, do an affirmation or look at your vision, or in my experience, a lot of times that's a form of violence against oneself. And even if in the short term it distracts you, usually it pulls you deeper into that sandpit because you're not addressing what's actually going on. Now that's for when it's truly a chronic challenge. There are certainly moments where, and there's another degree to where the self-improvement and self-help industry has become too much about navel gazing. And where, you know, when you drive a car, you have a big windshield and a little rearview mirror for a reason. Because most people, though, in the self-help world have created vehicles with giant rearview mirrors and tiny windshields. So they're mostly thinking about their past and they're regurgitating that. They become self-indulgent. And that's the perfect recipe for anxiety and depression. Keep thinking about you, and you're guaranteed to be in anxiety and depression in no time. So there's a balance in knowing, when should I just take my attention off myself and do something productive, creative, of service? That's one of the fastest ways to get out of the anxiety. But in general, if you suffer from this on a regular basis, it's really my experience is that the most abundant path is to love and care about yourself enough to understand what's going on with yourself. And we haven't talked yet about what the emergence principle is, but the whole idea of emergence is that there's a perfect pattern within every seed, including us. And when the conditions are right or congruent, that seed emerges, that potential emerges. But a plant doesn't just grow up to the light. It's all light and rainbows. It actually grows down into the dark. And the deeper the roots are anchored in that dank, dark place, which is really the womb of creation, which is made up of everything that has died and decayed and rotted. The more the roots are anchored in that, the taller the shoots and the richer the fruits. So when we are willing to look at those places where the anxiety is coming from and understand these are parts of ourself that are seeking to be heard and to be held, and then they can be healed. What happens is we discover and we reclaim these moments of growth and development that we lost along the way, and we grow up. And now we can actually experience more of a sense of wholeness and the power and the confidence, the things that we've been trying to seek out there. All of that is a gift inside the shell of that pain, that anxiety, that depression, that fear, whatever that is. So my suggestion in that case is start there. That's the most abundant path. And we can talk more about then what, but that's definitely step one in my experience.
I love it. And it's such a beautiful setting and condition to start from, because you're right. We not only get that message from outside, from everybody else, of kind of the either suck it up, or, you know, this is how resilience is made, is by just, you know, pushing on and pushing forward. And so we do it to ourselves too. You know, I catch myself doing it all the time, and I catch other people I love doing it all the time. And I'm like, you don't have to move just yet. There's only been 10 minutes or 10 hours that this thing happened out of your control. You're allowed to feel lousy about it for a little while. We're not going to stay here. We don't set up shop. We're not going to live here. But if you try to skip the part where it hurts, then the you know, the other, the gratitude and the trying to look at the silver linings and all the things that we're taught to do aren't real. They're just us trying to like spiritually bypass or emotionally bypass what we're really experiencing, right?
You're just putting whipped cream on top of poop and calling it a sundae. And eventually that whipped cream melts and it's not good. And it's actually a recapitulation of what happened to us in our childhood, is that we got the message, not okay to feel, not okay to express, not okay to get to figure out what's going on with me, must move on, must get a good grade, must make mommy and daddy happy. Mom's upset or dad's upset, teacher, friend. Okay, clearly this is, I can't, you know, and then we learned. Push past it, work past it, smile, do something for not, you know, be codependent, whatever it is. And so what happens is when it's triggered now, we might have a tendency to use those same coping strategies. And the number one personal development principle of all time, the first principle, is know thyself. above the Oracle of Delphi, and the original academy, and the original foundations that led to all the innovations in democracy and science and transformation of our modern world started with step one, know yourself. Then step two is be true to yourself. That's the wax on, wax off of personal development martial arts. It's know yourself, be yourself, know yourself, be yourself. But you have to first know yourself. Otherwise, what's happening is you're not being yourself. You're being mom's idea of yourself, dad's idea of yourself, teacher's idea, friend's idea, society, religion's ideas. And that is also a recipe for being out of sync with that seed of potential and power. And then anxiety becomes the signal that you're lacking in integrity. You're falling apart, literally. And it's inviting you to come back again, to remember, which means to bring the members back together, the parts back together of who you really are. And anxiety and these kinds of these feelings we don't like, if we can get comfortable with them as signals, then, and there's one for anger and there's one, they all have a meaning. And like it's like a dashboard on your plane, you're flying your plane and the light goes off, you know, low fuel. Oh, quick, cover that up, put something over that. You know, and then it's like a fire in the engine. Quick, cover that up. I don't want, let's talk about what's going on with you today, Bob, you know? And that's what's happening on our dashboard. It's telling you low altitude. Oh, you know, cover, no, you better pull up because you're going to hit a mountain. So these are signals. And we have to come back to being comfortable with listening to and holding ourselves. But it all comes back to the primary value of know yourself. That's where everything starts.
Absolutely. And you know, my next question was going to be about the steps for radical change in the law of emergence. You touched on it a little bit and you told us about, you know, the perfect pattern within each seed. But do you have anything else that you want to say about that to set us up before we get into the seven steps for radical change?
Well, I'll just say that, you know, for me, for many, many years ago, I was on a journey of self-improvement. And, you know, the only thing I improved after many years of self-improvement, I improved my ability to describe why my life was so screwed up. And I could describe all the moments and the events that happened to me that caused me to become who I was. And all that energy and attention on all the reasons why my life was so messed up, it drove me to drink, literally. And to drugs and eventually to an overdose. And I nearly died. And then things got better for a while. Cause I was like, I just got to work smarter, work harder, attract better, double down. And always things go better for a little while when you do that, when you prime the pump, but then everything fell apart again. And I was doing a movie in Jamaica and everything was falling apart. And I went diving in a coral reef, praying to get lost from everything above and be careful what you pray for. Little extra bonus insight, because I got lost and I got stuck in this reef and I was going to drown. Nobody was coming for me. I couldn't get out. And I won't go into the whole story, but there was a moment where I knew I was going to drown. All that was left was to let go. I'd gone through all the machinations of trying to make a deal with God. I'll go to church. I promise I'll be a good boy. Nothing was getting me out of there. And finally, I knew I wasn't going to make it. And in this moment of surrender, there was a real surrender and there was a flash of light. And I saw that this self that I'd been trying to fix and change and heal and improve, you know, make dad happy, proud of me, make mom think I'm not a bad guy, whatever my thing was, that he was a fiction. He was an amalgamation of parental fantasies and societal conditioning and peer pressure, and nothing I did would ever make him enough. But simultaneously, there was a self there within it or around it that had never been damaged or diminished. And so he didn't need to be fixed. Not only that, he was already perfect, whole and complete. So there was no way to improve upon him. And again, these were not words I had in that moment. It was a moment of realization. And in that next moment, somehow I was out of the coral reef, standing on top of this one area of coral protruding out of the water. I'm still not sure how I got there. And I could see this maze and I realized it was a metaphor for my life. I'd been swimming through this maze for years and now it was just literally happening. But I ended up going over the edge, swimming out. I pulled out of society. I became a monk for several years. I tried it literally at a monastery. Didn't go very well. But But basically, the realization was so profound, it shattered. Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall. And I realized then that in this meditative journey, that just as there is that perfect pattern within every seed, the oak is already in the acorn. And when the conditions are right, when they are a match for that pattern, when they are congruent, then that pattern naturally emerges. It unfolds. The acorn doesn't go out and achieve an oak tree. It doesn't go out and attract an oak tree. The acorn is not an inadequate oak tree. It's not a bad and a broken oak tree that has to go out and become something better. It's a perfect acorn. And the acorn is not an empty shell that has to go fill itself up. It's all there, waiting in this case for the right conditions to surrender to the soil and for those conditions. We are exactly the same. Everything in nature has come from a seed pattern, from an idea, from a pattern. The difference with us and the acorn is indigenous, meaning it requires external conditions and they're not entirely in its control, obviously. We are endogenous. We carry our conditions with us. We have the capacity. We are self-effulgent. We can turn on the light. We can activate the nutrients in our soul, in our mind. So no matter what the outer conditions are, no matter what we've been through in the past, no matter what we're currently facing, whatever the weather is, we have that capacity to create the congruent conditions, to come into integrity with that seed of our true destiny, our true potential. And that's the fundamental principle of the law of emergence. And it allowed me to go from being broke and broken and suicidal and all of that to, you know, a lot of amazing things. And that's just one piece of it. What we're talking about too is a part of it too, because with emergence, it's not just, you know, my destiny is to be abundant. And so I'm going to come into integrity with abundance. I'm going to think like an abundant person, feel like an abundant person, and act like an abundant person. That's a part of it. But just like in nature, many seeds need, and many certain kinds of trees need forest fires. Some kind of need really rough and rocky soil. So a lot of challenges, a lot of crises, a lot of difficulties in nature. And if it was a self-conscious jack pine and the forest fires coming through, the self-conscious jack pine would pray and affirm and visualize no more fires. Get rid of the fires. Firemen standing at the ready. And if it succeeded, it would go extinct because it needs the forest fire to open its seeds. So that's what we do, is we've got this idea that challenges, anxiety, depression, crises, bad problem. And I understand it feels like a problem, and it's a problem as far as problems go, but it's really an evolutionary trigger. It's actually inviting us to know ourselves and to hold, as I said, to hold and to hear and to heal and integrate a piece of us that won't just make us like we would have been, but because of the journey will make us more than we thought possible.
It's beautiful. And there's, in my life, I've learned that there's like a fundamental level of safety and security from which at least I experienced that I could feel and touch what you're talking about. And up until that level of development, it felt like the universe and the world were conspiring against me to hold me down. Yeah. Right. And like, I had a real, a strong story and narrative in my life.
Yeah.
And then there's this like tipping point. And for me, it was just like safety and security. And for every person that is defined differently, right? That could be monetary. It could be literally the people that you surround yourself with. And then this interesting thing happened where it doesn't matter what adversity I face, I feel safe within myself. And you don't believe that you're going to develop a process that will absolve or protect you from adversity anymore. You know it's coming, and you see it more as an invitation to test your own crap you're spewing all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Oh yeah, little boy, you think you know something? Watch this. Psh, psh.
I mean, it's happened to me, and it's happened to so many of my friends. I have a friend who was a voice coach, and she was having problems with her voice for 2 years. And she was like, this is it. I've decided I'm going to launch this huge plan. I'm doing it publicly for accountability. I'm going to heal my voice. And wouldn't you know, she got so sick that week, right? And I was like, of course you did, right? And this is not the universe conspiring against you. This is you getting tested on your resolve to actually follow through this with this. And what kinds of circumstances will you follow through on how much this means to you?
Exactly, to make you stronger. And I say to people, you know, the workshop you've been living is the one you're meant to be giving. And so it's, and the thing with the testing, it's like, yeah, when the burden is too heavy, don't pray that it becomes lighter. Pray that you get stronger and then start doing some reps, right? You know, if the thing is out of reach, don't wish and pray to bring it closer. Wish and pray and work to extend your reach. If you have a mountain in front of you, don't try to pray it away. Become a really good mountain climber. That builds a lot of muscles and a lot of dexterity and a lot of capacities. And that's the case, right? It's not put there against us, but for us to activate and to develop. There's a certain kind of plant in nature that, as I mentioned, needs very difficult soil, rocky, difficult soil. And as it's forced to dig its roots through that, it activates certain enzymes that develop a hardy bark that allows it to thrive in the particular climes that it's meant to live in. And even a baby chicken, when it's a little baby inside of an egg, it runs out of food, or so it seems, and it's surrounded by its own refuse, its own, you know, whatever. And it's cramped and it stinks and it's hungry. It's a bad situation. And instead of it going, I wish I had a bigger egg, or doesn't even know it's in an egg, a bigger house, a bigger, more food, it just starts, it's forced to start looking and searching and pecking for every little bit of good and nourishment that might be in its world. It just focuses on the nourishment. Where's the nourishment? Where's the nourishment? As a result of that, it cracks the shell. And as a result of the pecking and the cracking of the shell, it strengthens its neck muscles, its lung muscles, and becomes strong enough that when the shell cracks open, it can survive and thrive in a bigger world. If somebody was like, oh, that poor little chicken, and it took it out of the shell before it had to do all that hard work, it would die. So that's what's happening. That's the opportunity for us, just like you said.
Absolutely. And I know that you've said whatever's missing is what we're not giving. I would love for you to elaborate on that for me.
Well, yeah, and this goes to a deeper mystical, metaphysical principle, but it's really not that woo-woo. You know, all the great religions teach this fundamentally, but the basic idea is that we're not really in the world. Now, even neuroscience is now understanding this. Quantum physics is now understanding this. We're not really a separate, solid thing apart from the rest of the world. The world is in us. The world is in our consciousness. All relationships are in us. And so the truth, you know, all these great, you know, stories through legends about going for the fountain of youth and the lost gold of the Incas and all of these legends about searching for the Holy Grail have all been metaphorical quests about the search for the Holy Grail within us. Instead, that we don't, it's not about drinking from the fountain of youth. It's about drinking from the fountain of you. It's about digging a deeper well into your being. That's what all these quests are about. The treasure is in you. Buddha taught it, Jesus taught it, all the great teachers taught it. And so, but it's true. And again, if you think of like the seed, the whole pattern is within the seed. And so what we've been conditioned to believe is that we're empty shells, that we lack, and that we have to go into this world and get all the things we need. And so from the very beginning, we've been hypnotized to look for our good somewhere out there, right? It's like the guy that's looking for something under a street lamp out in the dark, and a friend comes by and says, what's wrong? He's like, I lost my key. And he's like, looking for it for like an hour. And he's like, after an hour, he's like, where'd you lose it again? He's like, oh, I lost it inside, but the light's so much better out here. Right? So we've been conditioned to go outside of ourselves. But the spiritual and universal truth is that everything is within us. And again, we every great technology, every great innovation has come from the mind or the consciousness of an individual. So we've got plenty of examples. And so what this means is that if we want more to come into our life, we have to find some way to let more life come out of us. And this is specific. If I want more love to come to me, then I need to first, this is the law of circulation, by the way. The law of circulation is that you cannot give what you don't have, and you cannot keep what you don't give, and you cannot sustain what you don't receive. So you have to have it, you have to give it, and you have to receive it. That's a complete cycle or circuit, like a breath. And so let's say we're in a situation where my partner or my boss or my colleague or somebody is not giving me, I'm waiting for them to love me or to validate me or to respect me. And so there's a lack of that in my environment or appreciate me. Well, the first step is I have to remember that all the love and the respect and the appreciation, everything that I want, I already have it. It's already within me. It just hasn't been activated because of this hypnotism, of this conditioning. So the first step is I have to give it to myself. So I ask, if I love, validated, appreciated, respected, fill in the blank, myself that much, how would I treat myself today? What would I start doing in my life? What would I stop doing? Now, this is really important because remember, the anxiety is a signal. Anxiety is a signal that you're out of alignment with your belief or your perception or your expectation about yourself or about the world. So this can be a very powerful way, because what you'll discover when you go through this is like, oh my God, I'm really not valuing myself. I'm really letting people take advantage of me. And that's why I feel so fragile. That's why I feel scared. And actually underneath that, I'm really angry, because I've been letting my boundaries be violated and my values be violated. And I'm not really speaking up for myself. You'll start to go, holy moly. Now you might be more anxious from a while realizing that, oh my God, I'm really, but that's the awakening. That's the moment of knowing yourself. It's like, wow. But now this really works. If I really loved, valued, respected, appreciated myself, if I really believed in myself, instead of seeking them to believe me and validate me and approve of me and appreciate me, and every condition has to be just so I feel safe. And no, what is it that I need to give me? And you write that down and then pick something easy to start. And then just start practicing it. And then eventually you build it as a practice. And eventually it'll lead to the next thing. Well, I would have this conversation with my husband or my partner or my wife I would actually have to say no to this. I would want to say yes to this. And that starts to grow. So that's the first step, giving it to yourself. And then the second step is, now where am I seeking it? My husband needs to give me validation, or my boss, or now instead you have a little bit of something now to give. I'm going to actually seek to find the blessing in him or her. I'm going to find places where I can respect them more or validate them more. Or appreciate them. I'm good. I got a little bit. Yeah, there's still a part of me that's like, I wish they would give it to me. It's okay. But you give it. And then the final piece is, you keep an eye out for where is love or respect or validation actually coming to me, but I've been cognitively blind to it. I've been pushing it away. My husband does something nice and I think he's got a hidden agenda, or whatever the case might be, or my boss, or, you know, or the person opens the door for me and I'm kind of shy and I look away, like, but they're smiling at me. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see that the world is sending love my way, and I was blind to it. So now I'm giving it to myself, I'm giving it away, and I'm seeing it and I'm receiving it. You look nice today. Oh, this old ratty dress. And then said, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, and you just take it in. And now what's happening is there's the circuit, which was broken, which we may not have time to get into today, but we might, in terms of shadows and values conflicts and our story and why the circuits get broken, it's now mending. And wherever there's a circuit, you've got circulation, you've got growth, you've got new life. There's new life in you. You start to feel more alive. And that anxiety in that area, or that depression, or whatever, it starts to dissipate because the signal, you've taken care of the engine fire. It's not on fire anymore. Now that takes practice, and you want to eventually build it as a new habit. And then that habit becomes a part of your character, and your character determines your destiny, not your conditions. But that's how it starts. We start building, rebuilding these circuits of self-love and respect and all of that. And that's that, in that way, now you turn on the inner power plant that's generating everything instead of waiting for the world. And that way you become the light in the world. You become the energy, the source of life and light and energy and joy and power. And you don't look to anybody for that anymore. It doesn't mean you can't ask for help. It just means, you know, I'm a divine generator. I'm a divine power plant. And a power plant doesn't need energy. It generates it. And it generates whatever the quality is that you want.
Mm. I want to just like sit there and let everybody just have that sink in, because it's so true. I've had this happen in my life. And it was, yeah, where I woke up one day and realized that I spent 90% of my energy trying to get specific sets of people to give me what I needed and had so desperately wanted, and 10% of the remaining energy deflecting all the people that were trying to actually, right? And if you flip it and you allow yourself to actually feel and see yourself the way those who truly love and see and know you, see you and know you and feel you, all of a sudden, yeah, it's really, really, really powerful. It can't be understated.
It's very powerful. And, you know, because ultimately you can't really receive, well, first of all, you can't receive what you don't see. And if you're not loving yourself, in this case, just using self-love, if you're not loving and valuing yourself, you actually have a cognitive blindness. You can't really see it. And also, if you're trying to give, because other people are giving, 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 giving with an unconscious agenda, and maybe not so unconscious, if I just give enough, eventually I'll get some back. And that's called codependence and all this, you know. And but what happens is you're giving from an emptiness. And so you can't really give what you don't have. So guess where you have to pull it from? You have to pull it from stores that you need. So instead of giving away your fruits, you're giving away your roots. You've got this little seed that's growing. And now what you're supposed to do is feed your roots until you blossom fruits, and give away all your fruits, because the tree doesn't need its fruits. The apples are no use to the apple tree, but they're really a good use to the community. Give away your fruits, give away your ideas, give away the byproducts of your self-love and self-wisdom and self-knowing. Give it away. That's your harvest to give away. But what happens is, if you haven't done this work, you haven't filled yourself up and fed your roots, you don't have fruits. And so when in order to try to get what you need, because you're not giving it to yourself, you just break off one of your roots and give it away. Now, what happens over time is you have no more roots. And what happens to your tree? It withers. It needs even more. It's even more disabled. And now that can all be repaired, but it's an image to remember. Don't give away your roots. Only give away your fruits. Only give away from the overflow. Fill yourself up first. You know, it's the old analogy, when the oxygen mask falls, put it on yourself. It's another way of thinking of it. But I think there's something very visceral about, I'm giving away my roots. That's really stupid. I'm not going to be able to grow at all anymore. And so, yeah, it's a very powerful principle.
Yeah.
Life-changing for me and for many
completely.
People.
And I live in Florida, where where tree roots are extremely important to us because of hurricanes. Yes. Right. And you
that's
know,
another good point.
Talk metaphor about of like about stability. Resilience. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
If you give, no wonder you get more and more fragile the more you try to, you know, is because you're like, literally you're just hobbling on a tiny little edge. But the more you have your roots, and you feed your roots, and you feed your roots, and you fill your roots, yeah, the storm will come along and it may be a little shaky, but you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, within
the
list.
The droughts come along, the lack, and you don't dry up because your roots tap into a deeper spring. And even the fires come along and they don't burn you all the way down, because your roots, 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 It's really important.
As you've been speaking and talking about like indigenous versus endogenous, and I actually just spoke to an indigenous shaman from the Amazon last week, and he said something that has been rattling around in my brain, which is, you will never see a forest at war. And it just reminds me so much of all the principles that you're talking about and how beautiful that sentiment was. And
the ecosystem.
Yeah.
There's the Ojibwa American, or are they Native American? Ojibwa Indians. But there's a saying, the branches of a tree are not so foolish as to fight amongst themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Derek, I have a feeling we could talk forever, but I want to be mindful of yours and everyone else's time. So if people are interested more in your work and what you do, how can they find out more about you?
They can certainly go to derekrydell.com. That's my website, DerekRydall.com. It's spelled with an A-L-L, but it sounds like Rydell. And there's lots of free trainings on there focusing on these different ideas and aspects that we've been talking about. They can also check out my podcast, Emergence, on iTunes and wherever podcasts you can get podcasts. And I go into a lot of these deep dive conversations and specific practices. And but I would say those are the two best places. They can also grab my book, Emergence, which is a best-selling book, which really digs very specifically and practically into how to tap into this seed pattern of your potential and how to design a way of life and a way of living that allows for it to blossom.
Beautiful, Derek. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you.